Simmons versus Stevens and Bradshaw. Just a minute, tell the court people of the seat. All right, Mr. Sales.
May it please the court and good morning. I'm David Sales for the appellants. Daniel Hoffman of my office is here with me. And Mr. Lewis is seated in the front row right behind him. He was trial counsel from the Searcy Denny firm in West Palm Beach. I'd like to, if I may, Your Honors, focus on two related errors of the district court with respect to its order granting partial summary judgment on the Monell claim against the sheriff. The first of those errors is taking the position without citation to authority in the very particular circumstances of a case like this, that the sheriff's custom of exonerating deputy sheriffs involved in a shooting before conducting any reasonable investigation could not support imposition of liability under Monell unless the plaintiff had established that there were prior unconstitutional shootings as a result of that same custom. And then the second error is after this court disposed of the interlocutory appeal on Deputy Lynn's contention that he was entitled to qualified immunity on summary judgment, refusing to allow the plaintiff, after the year-long delay that was necessitated by the interlocutory appeal, to supply the court with the very type of information that the court had previously said was lacking. Now, on the question, the first question as to whether or not there was a custom, I would like to point out to the court that the sheriff does not really take issue as to whether or not we provided sufficient record evidence of a custom of this particular sheriff coming to the scene either directly or occasionally through his principal surrogate in that regard, Ms. Barbara, and declaring the actions of a shooting by a deputy to have been justified, usually at the scene, and thereafter often frequently followed up immediately by press releases the same day, interviews on television, and as the court knows from the record as well, sometimes in statements that appeared in the newspaper. Many of those statements in the newspaper they take issue with, but I would merely point out to the court that in the Samples case, it's cited at footnote 11, 846 Southern 2nd at 1333, this court actually took notice of a newspaper account on the issue of whether or not there could be notice. The sheriff, as I mentioned, does not actually take issue as to whether or not this policy was in place. And in fact, the district court actually articulated it just as we did in our moving papers and in our complaint. And this is in our appendix 3112.
So a custom or policy of permitting excessive force can be established through newspaper hearsay, like newspaper reports and media reports?
Well, we're not relying on that because, as I mentioned a few moments ago, Your Honor, they take issue with that, and the district court did as well, as to whether or not those could be.
What's important, what happens at the end of the day? A shooting takes place after it's all investigating and some disposition is made. Isn't that what the key piece of evidence is?
Well,
main importance.
It is important in this case, certainly, and we know that
in any case.
It is important in any case, correct. I agree with that. The question that we are suggesting that the district court overlooked is whether or not an existing custom of exonerating the deputy before an investigation can take place.
The problem is whether or not at the end of the day, deputies know, regardless of what the sheriff may say during the investigation or immediately, there will be discipline.
Right, and our position.
That's the question. So your argument has to be that at the end of the day, there's no discipline, basically, which sends a message that you can use excessive force.
I agree with Your Honor to this extent. Certainly it was our position, and our expert gave an affidavit saying so, that when you routinely show up to the shooting and tell the deputy based on his or her account alone that their actions have been exonerated by the sheriff, who sits atop at the disciplinary chain and to whom the record evidence in this case indicates internal affairs reports directly, not only at the scene but thereafter, that their actions have been vindicated before you could possibly conduct any reasonable investigation. That's the message that was sent. And the error of the district court, Your Honor.
In other words, the sheriff arrives at the scene as a matter of policy, says you're exonerated, which means that the investigation and the disciplinary proceeding will be window dressing.
That is our position.
That's your argument.
That is our position.
It's a fraud, basically.
That is our position. That is our position, that that was the custom. The district court took the position that, which we did supply evidence of in our later submission after the interlocutory appeal, the district court took the position that unless you show me that there have been prior unconstitutional shootings as a result of the custom, then you cannot make that claim.
But wasn't there an investigation, regardless of what he said on the scene? Did an investigation take place, and did you question the results of those investigations?
Absolutely, and we took the position based on some of the authorities that are cited in our brief that that was corroborative, actually, of the very facts which we're asserting, that that is the custom of the department and that the investigation is, in fact, window dressing. And to answer your question more directly, as the court is probably aware, I think it's 87A in the docket, there was a videotaped evidence of this particular encounter which directly challenged the version of the events that was told to the sheriff, which was the basis of his public statement, the basis of the Same Today press release, which directly contradicts the evidence, the statements that the sheriff relieved from Deputy Lynn. And the people that were in the department that were responsible for investigating those matters confessed at the very first time that Deputy Lynn's statements were actually not accurate when they were deposed in the civil lawsuits in this case. Up to that point in time, they 100% took the view that he had expressed and stated that they had previously simply not seen the things in the videotape, which if this court watches, it can see them very clearly, that the man from the time he is first encountered is being trailed by the Deputy Lynn to the time that he is shot four times without cause, that he is holding a cell phone in his hand the entire time. And the account that was given by Deputy Lynn was simply false. And whether the jury found, one of the unusual things about this particular circumstance is that we've had a trial with respect to the reasonableness of Deputy Lynn's perceptions thereafter. And those perceptions were, according to the jury at least, not objectively reasonable. I'd like to move very quickly to the second point, because I do want to save some time knowing that there's a cross appeal. The second point is if the district court was correct that you cannot win a case based on a theory that there is a custom of exonerating without doing an investigation, that there has to have been a prior deprivation of constitutional rights in the form of a shooting that was unjustified. And when we came back after this court affirmed the denial of summary judgment on qualified immunity, different evidence relating to other incidents, some of the incidents about which we had knowledge, but certainly no discovery, no expert opinions had been developed in those cases. And we supplied those to the district court in what I would suggest is actually a Rule 60 motion, asked the court to take note of that additional evidence and vacate the summary judgment order to supply the court with the evidence that the court had indicated was lacking. The district court actually said that it wished it had had that evidence prior to the time that it had entered summary judgment previously, but it accepted the sheriff's view that under what I would suggest was really a Rule 59 argument relating to final judgments, and of course there had been no final judgment, that it could not consider evidence that was developed, even though it had been developed, the evidence had been developed after the summary judgment hearing, because the events themselves had been developed, had actually taken place prior to the time of the summary judgment hearing.
But did they take place, those developments, after the shooting in this case?
From memory, I believe, Your Honor, that certainly at least one of them, from memory, took place prior to the shooting in this case.
Well, how can there be a custom that occurs after the event?
Well, I agree that under this court's decision in Salvado, you cannot have an after-occurring event that proves causation, but they would have been corroborative of the existence of the policy. I think that if I understand Your Honor's question correctly, at least one of those events, as I recall, had actually taken place prior to the Stevens shooting and therefore would have been not only corroborative of the policy, corroborative of the reaction by the sheriff's office, but also suggestive of the element of causation. And finally, on that in that regard, before I do sit down and reserve the rest of my time, we do take the position as well, and the district court did not really seem to have addressed this, that causation was established at least under this court's fairly liberal rules in terms of inferences that should be drawn in favor of the non-moving party, and knowing that circumstantial evidence can support an inference of causation in this very setting, that Deputy Lynn had testified that he was aware of the sheriff's policy, and in fact, we know also from the record that a 31-year veteran of the sheriff's department took the position that this policy was also known, what we're calling what a policy or custom.
What policy?
The custom of showing up and announcing.
How about the policy of window dressing?
I think we're talking about the same thing.
No, we're not. The window dressing is poisons all of the investigations and the results. It means they're all a sham. Because the sheriff who has the final word has already decided the matter at the scene.
That is our position.
I understand that.
And our position is also that it effectively is a policy of window dressing, because how can people be expected in what is a military chain of command effectively when they report directly to the sheriff? How can they be expected to reason, and we were entitled to this inference, to reasonably contradict the man who has not only come to the scene and exonerated the actions of the deputy, but issued a press release to that effect? Thank you, Your Honor. Reserve
you
the rest
save
of
your
time.
Rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Ms. Barranco.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Summer Barranco here from Purdy, Jolly, Jafrida, and Barranco on behalf of the appellees, Sheriff and Deputy Lynn, as well as the cross-appellant Deputy Lynn. I've been told by the clerk this morning that this is my one and only time to address the panel in regard to both appeals, so I will do my best in that regard, and I'm certain Your Honors will have no problem interrupting me if you have any questions. In regard to the initial appeal, Your Honors, it's obviously the appellee's position that the trial court did not err in granting summary judgment to the sheriff on the Monell claim. As I'm sure Your Honors are well aware, of the Jill Brown case from the United States Supreme Court in 1997 and subsequent case law that makes it clear that a Monell claim against an agency such as the sheriff's office has a very high standard of proof, very rigorous requirements of both culpability and causation. Otherwise, what happens is if the trial court doesn't require those high levels of culpability and causation, what happens is it collapses into respondeat superior. And frankly, Your Honors, from just a public policy standpoint, it would be a scary world indeed if every time there was a shooting, all the plaintiff's lawyers had to do was file media reports about an incident, that suddenly there would be trials against agencies on every one of these shootings. I don't think that's what the case law suggests, Your Honors, and I think the trial court properly got that in the order for summary judgment granting the Monell claim in favor of the sheriff's office. In regard to what happened here, I know
is there anything in the record that would reflect any prior discipline or change in training after the previously settled 16 excessive force claims?
Well, Your Honor, I guess the question would be specifically as to what type of training. I know that was one issue regarding settlements, and plaintiffs or appellant's position is because there were settlements that should be evidence that a jury could conclude there was a custom or policy.
But was there any change in training that's reflected in this record or any prior discipline at all?
And just to clarify, Your Honor, are you referring just to the cases that there were settlements in or at any time?
Any.
Well, Your Honor, Jackson versus Montesino that was mentioned, that was a case where there was a shooting. One of the Palm Beach Sheriff's deputies shot an individual in the head. The gentleman survived that shooting. And that was a situation where the deputy's probationary status was was extended, but then ultimately that deputy was terminated by Sheriff Bradshaw. That's something that's in the record.
Well, all of these officers have Florida Development Department of Law Enforcement Academy training.
Yes, Your Honor, and that was in the record.
And what is the, how frequent is the update training locally?
Well, in regard to, well, it's annual retraining. Certainly they get training when they're in the academy, and then once they are part of the force, they get at least annual training, if not regular regular, depending on when the classes are conducted. So a lot of the training jackets will show, consistent training throughout the year, just depending on when the classes are actually offered, but certainly at least an annual basis they're trained on use of force and other things that they're confronted with. The training does change depending on things that are going on in out in society, so different classes are offered at different times. But certainly as to the use of force, it's at least on an annual basis.
Just two quick questions, and I'm sure you get to it. Did you object to the jury instruction at issue here at trial?
Just to clarify, Your Honor, are you referring to the special interrogatory?
No, the jury instruction first. The jury instruction to include that the judge ultimately gave, which says whether a specific use of force is excessive or unreasonable depends on factors. I'm not asking you about the subject. Was that objected to, or did you agree to that?
It was absolutely objected to. What was referred in the brief that was filed on behalf of the sheriff and Deputy Lynn, Your Honor, was that what happened during the trial court proceeding is trial counsel repeatedly objected to the instruction that was given.
At the charge conference, you objected to this instruction?
At a charge conference, after the charge conference, before the jury was read the instruction. But then what happened, Your Honor, is, as officers of the court, we repeated our objection, but then said, obviously, the court had decided it was going with this.
Right.
The court said it acknowledged the objection.
Yes, Your Honor.
What I want to know is, why did the court not send a special interrogatory to the jury on the qualified immunity issue?
Why did he not?
Yeah.
I think...
I'm assuming it was requested.
Oh, it was absolutely...
Along with the...
Absolutely.
I read that part of the record.
Yes, it was absolutely requested.
But your request, which I have here, was made an objectively reasonable mistake. You really asked the jury to make a legal determination of whether the officer was entitled to qualified immunity. Isn't that something for the court to determine? You didn't ask the jury to make any factual findings.
Well, Your Honor, and I know you're from a different circuit.
Yeah.
I know the 11th Circuit fairly recently came down with the opinion in the Montero case, where a very similar situation happened. It would be our position and the 11th Circuit's opinion in that Montero case, where a special interrogatory was given to a jury in an officer-involved shooting case, and the jury concluded that the shooting of that particular gentleman, Mr. Montero, was excessive. But in that case...
Well, excessive force or qualified immunity?
Well, in the Montero case, there was no mention of qualified immunity to the jury.
What is it that you're asking the jury in this interrogatory? You find, by the preponderance of the evidence, that Deputy Lynn made an objectively reasonable mistake?
We're asking the jury to make a decision in regard to the facts underlying the qualified immunity defense. And if the trial court would have permitted us to do that, as the trial court allowed us to do in the Montero case, then the jury would have been given the opportunity to then look at that special interrogatory. If they were to answer in the affirmative, then the trial court would have been given the opportunity to enter judgment as a matter of law in favor of the deputy on the defense of qualified immunity, finding as a matter of law he would be entitled to that.
Well, what facts were in dispute?
In this particular case?
Yeah, that you wanted the jury to make a determination of.
Well, the defense always, Your Honor, was in this case that Deputy Lynn mistook a cell phone for a gun. And so it was the defendant's position that it was a mistake on his part.
There was another instruction that was given that, in according to the brief, when an officer's mistaken belief that a citizen poses an immediate and deadly threat is objectively reasonable under the circumstances, then the officer's use of deadly force is not excessive or unreasonable. Wasn't that included in another instruction?
Well, Your Honor, that was, if I'm understanding you correctly, that was actually the jury instruction that the judge below in the trial court went with in lieu of the special interrogatory question.
But you could never find out how they answered. Without a special interrogatory, you can't determine from a general verdict whether the jury found the facts necessary to trigger qualified immunity. The Fifth Circuit is replete with cases in which instructions are given to the jury on the underlying factual issue that goes to qualified immunity.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is our position. I think Your Honor might be referring to the Snyder case.
We have unpublished opinions, but the Fifth Circuit has published several.
A scenario where the shooting...
In which the jury finds a constitutional violation, but finds a fact which... exonerates the...
If they were to find that the deputy's mistake was an objectively reasonable one, and that was, frankly, the entire case for the defense, for Deputy Lynn, and it's our position as set forth in that appeal that by the trial court denying the special interrogatory question and changing the language of the jury instruction as Judge Wilson referenced, that actually was an inaccurate statement of the law, such that Deputy Lynn's ability to get qualified immunity was completely gone away.
Without a special interrogatory, you can't have qualified immunity anyway, as I see it, in these cases.
I would agree, Your Honor.
Because the instruction goes to the Fourth Amendment, excessive force.
Yes, Your Honor. And in terms of the instruction that was given to this jury, they're being told, essentially, ladies and gentlemen, shooting Mr. Stevens, who only had a cell phone, could be found to be reasonable, even without the mistake part of it. And it would be our position that it would be unconstitutional to shoot someone just because they have a cell phone, but if the deputy's perception was that the cell phone was a gun, and that was an objectively reasonable belief, then, notwithstanding the constitutional violation, the deputy would be entitled to qualified immunity.
Wouldn't that be, if those were the facts, then the jury wouldn't find excessive force? Because under the circumstances, the force that was used would have been reasonable.
Well, Your Honor, I know there's some case law from the 11th Circuit that frankly is a little confusing when you read it, talking about if there was a mistake, a reasonable mistake, then it's not a violation of the Constitution, such as the Quills case. And I, frankly, am having difficulty fitting those together. But it seems to me when you just kind of merge it all together, as was done here, you're denying the deputy the ability to find out, per the instruction of Cottrell versus Caldwell, you know, this is the essence of his defense, and to not permit that issue, the factual issue anyway, to go to a jury, it is essentially denying the deputy that defense.
I'm asking you, and maybe I'm having the same trouble that you're having, is if the facts are as you stated, then there would be no excessive force. If the facts are that there was excessive force, how would you frame the question that even though the force was excessive, i.e. was not reasonable, the deputy would have been entitled to qualified immunity?
Well, it's difficult, Your Honor. As the courts have said, the 11th Circuit has said, you're not supposed to mention qualified immunity in a jury instruction. So you can't do that. So what we were...
Well, he said more than that. He said it's up to the court to determine whether or not this entitlement to qualified immunity. Or the jury will decide the facts, the underlying facts, if there are any in question.
And in this case, it was our position that the dispute and the fact, per what the trial court judge said, is whether or not Deputy Lynn's mistaken belief that it was a gun, whether that was reasonable or not, or objectively reasonable.
Counsel, the point of the matter is, whether it was mistaken or not, a Fourth Amendment violation occurred. But that doesn't answer the question of qualified immunity.
Correct, Your Honor.
And several of the Fifth Circuit cases point that out graphically with the instructions to the jury, more so than our court has.
Yes, Your Honor.
Our court has done that. Qualified immunity, and the point of the matter is qualified immunity does not die when the trial commences.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
It cannot be determined.
Absolutely.
Without a special interrogatory.
Such as in the Montero versus Nand Law case that Your Honor has just recently determined. Similar scenario as this case in terms of an officer-involved shooting, but that trial court judge permitted a special interrogatory question, and that jury actually...
Well, if the judge didn't permit the interrogatory to be used, you couldn't decide qualified immunity.
Correct, Your Honor. There's no way for that to happen. I don't know if Your Honors want to hear further on the Monell appeal. I know we set forth our position at length in the briefs. As Judge Rebreno said a moment ago when the other side was up here, certainly things that happened after Dontrell Stevens was shot on September 13th of 2013 could not have caused the shooting, and that's a basic premise in this case, and frankly why much of what the plaintiff below put forth on the record does not pass muster and sustain a claim to a jury.
I think as was discussed earlier, the theory is that the sheriff, in a sense, absolved these shootings at the outset, and what happened later was a sham or fraud. Is there in the record some development of what happened after the sheriff so-called absolved the shooter and the investigations were carried out?
Well, in the record, Your Honor, there's reference to the state attorney's memorandums where investigations were conducted, aside from what the sheriff may or may have not have said on the scene.
Did any investigations result in a finding contrary to what the sheriff said on the scene?
Not ultimately, Your Honor, no. I mean, you're saying what the sheriff said on the scene, just so we're clear, he would be saying things based on what he was advised at the time.
Right.
And there weren't any state attorney's office investigations that came up with it was an unjustified shooting or criminal charges were brought in any of those shootings.
So they confirmed what the sheriff had initially said?
In essence, yes. In essence, as well as there being evidence in the record that not only did the state attorney's office do its own investigation, so did the sheriff's office. So it looks like I'm out of time, unless Your Honors have any further questions.
We understand you.
Stand on the briefs. Thank you very much.
Judge Rebreno, just to respond first to the issue that you just raised, the answer to your question is yes. The Adams case, which is one of those matters that we tried to bring to the court's attention after we came back from the interlocutory appeal, this court subsequently affirmed a denial of a motion for summary judgment on qualified immunity. And that was one of the matters that we sought to bring to the attention of the district court after the district court made it clear that it wanted some evidence of a lack of justification. And I would just say, we discussed this extensively in our brief, it's our position that something that the state attorney does, in this case, for example, 4 months after the events, not necessarily based on the same circumstances that we are saying is the identity of the sheriff's custom, that is not proof as to whether or not there is a custom, number one, and that is not proof, number two, as to whether or not it was causally related to the shooting. I do want to take a few minutes before I go back to the Monell issue, if I have time, to talk about this issue of the jury instruction, because I think it's important for the court to remember that even if the court concludes, and we disagree with this, we do agree with the district court on this, but even if the court concludes that the defendant was entitled to a separate jury question on the issue of qualified immunity, as in
special interrogatory.
A special interrogatory on the question of qualified immunity.
That's because an instruction without the special interrogatory is meaningless.
Well, I'm going to respectfully disagree with Your Honor.
I'll tell you why it's meaningless, counsel.
I'm sorry?
I'll tell you why it's meaningless.
Okay.
It's because the factual underpinning of the qualified immunity defense is not relevant to the Fourth Amendment excessive force claim. If there has been an excessive force violation, it doesn't matter whether or not the officer is entitled to qualified immunity.
Your Honor.
The plaintiff still prevails because it was an excessive force claim. But the factual underpinnings of qualified immunity don't have anything to do with whether there was a constitutional violation.
All right, if I may, Your Honor, in this particular case—
You're familiar with the raft of Fifth Circuit cases, I take it.
I'm familiar generally with Your Honor's reference to the Fifth Circuit cases and the issue of a special interrogatory—
About the need to send it to the jury.
Right, and I do want to address that, but I would like to just also, if I may, because there is a point that we make in our brief, and it was a point, I believe, that was taken up by the district court, because it was the obligation, if that is the rule of this court, if that's going to be the rule that a special interrogatory verdict was required to be proposed by the defense, and it was required to be proposed in a form that was legally correct. And one of the reasons that it was rejected, based on the arguments of my co-counsel in the district court, was the question that they asked for was this, that Deputy Lins made an objectively reasonable mistake when he perceived that Dontrell Stevens threatened Adams Lynn with a firearm and so forth. One of the things that concerned the district court was that assumed the question that they asked for on qualified immunity assumed a version of the facts in the case that was hotly disputed by the parties.
Well, that's why you sent a special interrogatory to the jury.
Right, but Your Honor, the special interrogatory in this case was proposed by the defense, one that was proposed included an ingredient that resolved a factual issue against us, and that was one of the reasons it was objected to. If I could move quickly to respond to some of the questions that were raised, and I would just urge Your Honor in considering this issue as to whether or not a special interrogatory was required to consider, and it's at page 30 of our brief, the additional language that was included by the district court to see if it does, in fact, as the district court.
Well, my position is that if without the special interrogatory, if that was not required, then their requested instruction was no good.
All right, Your Honor, I understand.
Follow me?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Their requested instruction ties into a special interrogatory, not to the Fourth Amendment claim.
I understand the court's position on that. I just to respond, if I can, I might take a second over to Judge Wilson's your question with respect if there had ever been discipline before. If you take a look, it's at page 23 and page 24 of our briefs. People involved in this investigation, a corporal, a captain, and a detective, a combined 72 years of law enforcement experience with this department, testified, and I don't remember which of them that it was, that there had been no change in sheriff's office policies, practices, or training, or anything that was learned during the investigation of an officer-involved shooting. Counsel asked the court to take note of the Montesino case. Please take a look, if you would, please, at footnote 1 at page 4 of our reply brief, because it is clear from that point forward that actually was not in the record and was not something that the district court could have mentioned. And then finally, I would like to quote Brown with respect to the Monell claim, since it was referenced by counsel. A plaintiff must, this is Supreme Court 520 U.S. at 412, a plaintiff must demonstrate that a municipal decision reflects deliberate indifference to the risk that a violation of a particular constitution or statutory right will follow the decision in this case being the custom. We submit that was a jury question. And Your Honor, Your Honors, the court should reverse. The relief that we request is expressly stated in the brief. Thank you.
We have your case. Court will be in recess under the usual order.